Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And today we are talking about Last Train from Gun Hill. 1959 film directed by John Sturges, starring Kirk Douglas and Anthony Quinn.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Just, I love the classics. I love the classic actors. And Sturges, I had no idea he did as many Westerns as he did.
A lot of them, it turns out.
Magnificent Seven. My God. Mm-hmm.
Gunfight at OK Corral. On this.
Yeah.
Stuff that we don't expect to see. I was like, oh man, it's John Sturges too. Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm almost surprised this doesn't star a more traditionally Western actor in the lead role, considering what a Western as Western it is. But this
Kirk
role
Douglas
isn't quite right
quite
for John
few,
Wayne.
Though, didn't he? I mean, What's Kirk that? Douglas has done quite a few Westerns.
And has he?
Yeah.
See, I love Kirk Douglas, but I have to admit, I only kind of love him because of Spartacus and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Like, those are the
well,
films
those are
that
two,
I...
Those are two of his best.
Yeah, those are the ones I feel most people are familiar with, you know, or of his films. I don't know, are there others? I mean, maybe
I'd have to throw Vikings in there.
The Vikings.
Only because it's so nostalgic. I mean, I went to see that as a kid on a Saturday morning in L.A., and we stayed for three showings.
Oh, that's awesome. And Vikings
great.
Is pretty fun. It's a Viking movie, for God's sake.
Yeah, it is.
He really needed some facial hair in there if he's going to be a Viking, though.
I agree. Well, they actually, Ernest Borgnine makes a comment during the film. He shaves his head like, he shaves his face like an Englishman.
Yeah, that has Tony Curtis in it too, right? As a
yep,
uh-huh.
A
yeah,
slave.
He's got a beard. Yeah, that's a good one. The Vikings. I had never seen Last Train from Gun Hill. I had, in fact, never heard of it. This was a brand new movie to me. This is a request episode, recommendation from one of our listeners, Stephen. Thank you very much for this
Thanks,
recommendation.
Steve.
Yeah. And it turns out, I think this movie's awesome. I really enjoyed Last Train from Gun Hill. This is a
good movie.
This is, as Westerns go, it's really cool. It's especially for a 1959 film. This I was surprised it was so old. Actually, this felt a little more new wave to me. You know, it's not a 70s style sort of revisionist Western at all, but for some reason it's got an edge to it. It's got a darkness to it. That,
it's got an intelligent script.
That too. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And there's good actors, good lead actors.
The good guy is not as good a guy as he could be. You know, he's kind of insane a little bit.
Well, he's pretty pissed.
Yes. Uh-huh. And rightly so, and he's clearly the good guy. I mean, this is not, you know, like I said, it's not an anti-hero. This is, you know, but he's also, he's frightening. He's,
And that's one of the things I love, one of the things I love about Kirk Douglas is when he gets angry.
Oh, well.
You know, he gnashes his teeth better than anybody, man.
Man, is he angry in this movie. This is super angry Kirk Douglas.
I wish I could do a Kirk Douglas.
We will find occasion for you to try.
And
here.
He's got a scar on the side of his head.
He's great in this. I can't see somebody like Clint Eastwood or Randolph Scott. I guess I could see Randolph Scott's version of this, or certainly not John Wayne, though. There's an anger to this.
You're right. It's not a John Wayne style.
No, this is not his kind of role. Although, you know, he probably would have been interesting doing it, but the talk about Law and Order would have sounded a lot more honest coming from John Wayne. I will get to that part, but that's interesting stuff. So what this is, the basic plot of Last Train from Gun Hill is Marshal Matt Morgan, that's Kirk Douglas's character, is his wife is killed by bad guys, essentially. And they leave their saddle behind.
So the kid escapes on the horse.
Right. Uh-huh. He uses that saddle to track them to an old friend, which is Anthony Quinn. What's his name? Craig Belden.
Craig Belden.
Yeah, a cattle rancher who kind of runs a town, the town of Gun Hill.
Cattle rancher.
And
not as slimy as most, though.
No, definitely not. And turns out that the Craig Belden, Anthony Quinn's son, was the guy that attacked Kirk Douglas's wife. So it's the sins of the past come back to haunt them, kind of thing. But well, basically, if you've seen John Wick, it's the exact same plot as John Wick.
So they didn't kill the dog, yeah.
No, it's his wife, yeah. But, it's a dead wife situation all the same. And it is. It is structurally exactly the same movie as John Wick until the last third. The last act is different. But it's pretty... I was amazed watching this, how much it reminded me of that.
Body count's a little lower.
A little, you know? Yeah, okay, maybe considerably. But it reminded me how, just in the last episode of this podcast, we were talking about Open Range being an inspiration for John Wick 2. The director, Chad Stahelski, is quoted, saying that, Open Range inspired some stuff in that movie. And that leads me to believe that this film must have been an inspiration for the original. Because it feels so similar, like in just the way the story plays out, and Kirk Douglas is playing a John Wick-esque character as a cowboy in this, in a lot of ways.
That's right. It's up against the whole town.
Yeah. And there's even that scene when it's like, do you know who you did that to? No, it's just some guy. What's the problem, Dad? He's like, you don't know who that guy was,
That's right, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, A lot of scenes have direct parallels. We'll point them out as we go. this is a hard-edge Western. For 59, it's very hard-edge, it felt like, because it opens... Well, it opens with a great bit of with great credits, which is sort of a crude raised red metal on a burlap background.
Burlap, that's right. Yeah.
With some good whipping noises on the soundtrack.
Nothing says Old West like burlap.
then we're cutting to the opening of the film, which is a mother and son. Driving a buggy through the woods, and we'll notice that the mother is Native American. Immediately, that's right. A great thing in this. Actually, that's quite right. That's something else that they go there with this film. I thought.
And the son looks obviously not Native American.
Yeah. White kid. Yeah, little Opie looking kid. Really.
Right.
And the music in this is not one of the high points, but it is really really obtrusive in this opening scene.
as you brought up the music, let's talk about Dmitri Tiomkin, because he does a lot of. You could take the same score and adapt it to almost any Western. It's the same stuff over and over again that he does for all his movies.
No, leitmotif or any recognizable theme, for characters. It's not enjoyable.
In Gunfight at OK Corral, he did the music for that, too. At least he did the song with Frankie Lane singing the lead song. He was Dmitri Tiomkin was did the music score for High Noon as well.
Okay.
And did another song. Do not forsake me, oh my darling.
All right, that's what I know of High Noon.
Right,
off the top
but
of
he
head.
Didn't do that for this one, and it's just that the same old crap background, score that you get for so many of his films. He did Guns of Navarone as well. Dun 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 dun.
All right.
Anyway, so, I didn't particularly enjoy the score.
Harsh judgment for Dmitri Tiomkin's score. All right. That's not great. In this opening scene, though, where the mother and son are getting stalked by the bad guys, it turns into real Peter and the Wolf music. Did you see this? Where it's, you know, like Scared Bird nerd music, and then Wolf music, dun, 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 just cutting between
Didn't
them.
Didn't notice that. No.
Yeah, on the nose in that way. This is a creepy opening. A creepy opening for a film, especially a 1959 Western. They kind of chase her down, and they're sort of like flirting with her, and she's scared. And then the buggy gets overturned as they're kind of bumping into it, and she's like whipping at them. And
well, yeah, before the buggy overturns, she catches one of them on the cheek with her whip.
Yeah,
and lays it open to the bone, apparently.
Yeah, big old whip slash on the guy's face, which, you know, kind of, that kind of escalates it, and that's when he kind of knocks the buggy over, and then she just, like, staggers away from the wreck.
And tells the kid to get out of there in Indian dialect she was speaking.
They never nail that down, but yeah,
Cherokee, and then, I think she was.
Loses her top. Loses her top, you know. So immediately you're just like,
ripped
whoa.
Ripped off of her, yeah.
Yeah. And then these guys rape and murder her off camera. But it's just like, whoa, John Sturgis, oh my goodness. This is, you know, immediately announces itself as a much darker Western than what you might have been expecting. I mean, this is a hard edge Western, you know, in a 1950 kind of way. But it I like that we're finding the differences in these the old studio westerns now. This is one of the adult ones here.
Yep. Well, you know, you can see why he did it. You know, he has to set this things up for Matt Morgan to be so angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and for him to want, you know, to go after his, well, as we're gonna see here, his one of his best friends.
Yeah,
you know, he's got to be set up in some way, and that certainly did the job.
Absolutely, yeah. And then we meet Kirk Douglas, Matt Morgan, Marshall Matt Morgan, with a great little scene at the beginning where there are kids, like at the police at the Marshall's office or Marshall's what do they call it?
Marshall's office.
Begging him to tell them a story, and he does. He does. It basically turns into Ned Land for a second, I thought, from 20,000 Leagues. You know, the real, like,
same mannerisms. Yeah,
it's a real warm, like, and he like play acts the roles. He's like, oh yeah, and then I stuck my head through the window. Hey, what's going on? Doing voices and all sorts of stuff, and talking about the good old days and how he went up against the Bradley gang, and it's. I love this choice to introduce the character this way because this guy is gone for the rest of the movie. This guy
that's
is,
right. No
is
more.
Out the door.
No more friendly Marshall.
Mm-hmm. because, you know, shortly after, you know, like during this scene, news comes into town, you know, rides into town on a horse. That Douglas, it's his son, right? His son comes in.
His son escapes on Craig Belden's son's horse.
Right.
With the saddle on it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He when Craig Belden, that is the rapist that we've been describing. The guy who got the whip in the face.
Well, the guy that got whip is Rick Belden.
You're right. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Who has borrowed his father's horse anyway?
Right.
The rapist is Rick Belden. The kid rides back into town on Rick Belden's horse because of the confusion and everything getting wrecked and escalated at the site. He just escapes on the horse with this saddle and so immediately, you know, Kirk Douglas sees this. Here's what happened. You know, they're headed out there, but he already knows whose saddle it is. He already knows.
Yeah.
Who he's after, what's going to happen. And that's it. Off to the races with Last Train from Gun Hill.
Yeah. The opening I thought was perfect.
Oh, it's exceptional.
Because,
it is.
You know, if you've got a revenge flick, you've got to have some impetus for revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And he provided the perfect background.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nothing's going to deter Matt Morgan from his goal.
And we're fully on his side, too.
Yep.
No matter exactly what stuff happens after this, like, Kirk Douglas is our guy at this point, you know.
He's justified in doing whatever he wants.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we got to see these other guys go down, too, at this point, you know. Earl Holloman from Sons of Kitty Elder, right?
That's right, yeah.
Playing Rick Belden, the
who doesn't look much like his father, Anthony Quinn. But then, the Sons of Kitty Elder didn't look much alike either, did they?
This guy's good in this movie. Was he basically just showing up in like third leads and fourth leads and westerns? And
I've never seen him in a lead in a movie.
No, I was.
He's always been a secondary character.
Yeah, Not hey, fine work if you can get it. You know,
he did
a bunch of these. He's in some great films like this and The Sons of Kitty Elder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he ends up dead
in both of those, though. By the way.
He seems like he's the kind of guy who's going to get killed in a Western, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially after this next scene where we get to see him at a whorehouse slapping whores around and being an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Yeah.
Further justification.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like, he's not unlike the corresponding character in John Wick.
Oh, right. Yeah. Theon Greyjoy.
Yes, Theon Greyjoy and John Wick. I mean, it's essentially that character exactly. He's not quite as annoying as Theon Greyjoy, I guess. Maybe just by dint of him, you know, being in a different world in a Western, and, you know.
Do you happen to know the actor's name?
It's Alfie Allen. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. Way to go.
Uh-huh. It's
Alfie Allen.
And that is a hateful kind of an actor that is really good at being hateful.
He did a great job in John Wick. By the way, mm-hmm. We'll talk about this later, but I saw chapter 2.
Oh, we are gonna talk about that later.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be a John Wick heavy episode. I apologize about that right now, but you know what? As I said, I believe this film inspired John Wick. So Rick's dad, as it turns out, is Craig Belden, who is the city father here, the richest cattle rancher in town, the guy who runs the town. Everyone knows who he is. No one's going to mess with Craig Belden, as played by Anthony Quinn.
That's right. Yep.
And this
most,
is...
Most of the people in the town are employed by him.
Right. Including Magnificent Seven's Craig Baxter. You see that?
Brad Dexter. Yeah, yes. Brad Dexter, right. Yeah, oh, it's the right-hand man, right? The foreman?
Yeah, the guy with the mustache, the I think,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Guy. Brad Dexter. Yeah. Man, we gave him a hard time in Magnificent Seven. I think he's pretty good at this.
He was the least magnificent, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was least magnificent. But I think he's pretty good in this movie. He's playing a nondescript role, kind of. Yeah, like sort of one of the major, like a sergeant for Craig Belden. And yeah. He's got one very good scene coming up here. this is where I wrote in my notes. As we're meeting Anthony Quinn, is like, oh, this movie is John Wick. the information is discovered in this movie, I think, is excellent, because all he knows is that his idiot son left his saddle somewhere, he misplaced the saddle, and he is mad about this, you know, and it's like, you're going back, you're getting that saddle, and of course he doesn't want to do that because, you know, he lost that saddle while he was raping someone.
Well, no, the excuse they gave him is that they went into Kirk Douglas's town,
mm-hmm.
and were at a bar, and somebody stole the horses with the saddle on it
right.
while they were in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so they have no idea. They didn't see him. They have no idea who it was, but the horses were just gone.
And Anthony Quinn has no reason not to believe this, right? He totally buys that that his son is an idiot who got his horse stolen.
Right.
This is that scene with Brad Dexter, actually. The fight scene.
Right.
What is it? He gives him some. He insults the son in some way while they're all sort of hanging out in the room, and this is going down.
What does he say? He says,
it's kind of innocuous.
It's because he got scratched on the face.
It's because he got scratched on the face, and
Brad Dexter says something like, "He'd probably do better not to fight men," or something like that.
Yeah, maybe he should be fighting men instead of women.
Yeah, that's it. Fighting men instead of women. Yeah.
Yeah, and. And, you know, they all kind of laugh that off, and Anthony Quick is like, what, you're just going to laugh at that? You're just going to take that? You're just going to take that? My son, you're just going to take that?
Hit him. Hit him. Man insults you like that, you hit him.
I don't know. I'm not joking. Don't you leave. You hit him. And then he yells at Brad Dexter, don't you go easy on him. This led me to believe that that Anthony Quinn was playing a very bad guy in this movie. It turns out he's not. This is just a very bad guy scene, though.
Yeah. Well, you can see how he got where he was. By being ruthless.
No nonsense. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is some old-fashioned masculine identity stuff, you know?
This is another John Wick thing, the father and son confrontation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You're right.
This isn't actually the exact duplicate scene, but the relationship is very much the John Wick stuff. He's in the role of the Russian mob boss from John Wick.
Viggo,
played by Michael Nyquist. Yeah,
in John Wick, it's the father that does the smacking around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God, I love John Wick. So. Turns out, Kirk Douglas. Kirk Douglas and Anthony Quinn used to ride together. From conversations later, it kind of sounds like they used to be outlaws together. Like
the
they used
wrong
to be,
side of the law, yeah.
Yes, bad men together, and... And so that they know that, you know, they know kind of what's going down almost. Well, I guess Anthony Quinn does not fully understand yet. But even before he leaves town, once Kirk Douglas sees that saddle, he's just like, yeah, I know what's going to happen here. Yeah. And his father-in-law, whose daughter was killed as a Indian man, asks him to kill them slow in the Indian way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's right. I'll kill him my way.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Great. Great. Yeah. Right away. And then he gets on the train to Gun Hill, which is where that is the city Anthony Quinn runs.
Well, he is not. He knows that it's Craig Belden's saddle, but he doesn't know that the son is implicated or that Craig Belden himself is implicated.
That's right. He says there's probably, 30 people working for him, something like that. Yeah,
right.
You know, because he's a wealthy rancher. Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, but he is gonna kill him his way all the same.
Whoever it is, right?
Yeah. So on this train, lady comes up to him. This is Linda. This is the female lead of the film. This is Carolyn Adams. Is that right? Is that the name?
Carolyn Jones.
Carolyn Jones, who plays?
What's her Adams? The Adams family. Well,
yes,
what's her
Morticia
name?
Adams.
Morticia,
the original Morticia. I've never seen her in anything before.
Did you see her in the Adams family?
Well, I've seen the Adams family, yes, but I'd never seen her in anything where she wasn't Morticia Adams. And she's playing. You know, this is sort of a familiar role, I would say. The way that this lady is portrayed, you know, sort of a manipulator, sort of. Not quite a con artist, but like somebody who knows the angles and kind of like makes her way through this sort of dangerous men's world by sort of being able to, sort of be charming and insouciant. And
right. Well, and, as she mm-hmm. says, she was raised in places like the saloon.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. She is a dealer at the bordello. You know that. That's
right.
That is a suspicious job title, and and yeah, seems to have a lot of different angles, but also kind of like a sort of a just sort of likes making trouble, I guess. Like stirring up trouble.
Well, particularly for Craig Belden, because he's been treating her like shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not unlike, you know, the Angie Dickinson character in Rio Bravo. A lot of you know, or Jodie Foster in Maverick. That, you know, the characters that we talked about recently. You know, that kind of archetype. It's not as developed as those, I'd say, but.
Yeah, it's interesting in reading a couple of reviews on this. There weren't very many, but there was one viewer review that thought her performance was the best in the movie.
I can't agree with that, but no, she's good. No, she's good in it. Yeah. I mean, it's a tough character to kind of thread the knot on, I'd say, because there's a lot of stuff going on with her, and it seems to be, you know, real capricious.
Well, yeah, she was I guess in love with Craig Belden for a while, and then he treated her like crap, you mm-hmm. know, and she ended up in a hospital, and then she's coming back from the hospital, and he expected her to go out to the ranch, but no, she's staying in town. So right off the bat, she's running counter to the great Craig Belden.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. And nobody runs counter to the great Craig Belden.
Yeah, uh-huh. But, you know, it is like, you know, they're also kind of, they're in a relationship of sorts or something, or maybe not anymore. It's a...
kind of nebulous. Is,
yeah, uh-huh. Like, their relation status is not clear right. to either of them, I would say. They're sort of... Like, well, what now? Am I, you know, yeah. And it takes a while for the movie to let us know that, because she spends most of her scenes with Kirk Douglas, I would say.
Yeah, that's right.
And her interest in Kirk Douglas seems to just kind of be, he's interesting. It's not even especially flirtatious. I mean, she immediately pegs him, like, oh, I can tell you're married. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's certainly not in the mood, so.
Right.
So, yeah, but she's still kind of intrigued by him. And they have as much of an open, you know, he has as much trust with her as he does anybody else in the town of Gun Hill, and as a result, in the movie, pretty much. Like,
much more trust in her than anybody else in Gun Hill.
Mm-hmm. She's the only one who he really is able to talk to at all after a certain point. Yeah.
Right.
So, when they get to Gun Hill, there are goons there to meet him, you know.
Brad Dexter,
He gets off with the saddle, a very, very, very noticeable saddle. Very, was it like black and white?
Silver and black.
Silvery,
yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, I'll be coming. I'll be bringing this to Craig Belden.
Tell him I'm coming.
Tell him I'm coming, yeah. And nobody even really knows the whole story at this point, you know?
That's right.
Like, hey, no one knows what happened with the saddle. Kirk Douglas knows, you know, what happened with the wife, but Anthony Quinn doesn't know that. Whereas Anthony Quinn knows that the son was involved with the saddle. That is news to Kirk Douglas. So it all kind of comes out in this big scene where the two of them meet up. And this is a great, great little scene, right? This is fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's... first off, Craig Belden or Anthony Quinn figures out what happened while they're talking. You know, when Kirk Douglas mentions the guy getting whipped in the face, you know, like, you'll be able to see that for sure. And you see Anthony Quinn figure out, oh no, my son raped and murdered Kirk Douglas's wife. and then he kind of has to cover that up in the moment. And then you see Kirk Douglas figure out that he figured it out. And recognize that, and he's like, "Okay, which of those two boys had got the scar on their face?" Craig.
Plus, he tells Anthony Quinn that there were no bars open on Sunday.
Yes,
so,
right.
So the story of them having a drink in his town, and having the horses stolen, is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Which is news to Anthony Quinn, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a lot of this is great. This everyone kind of gets up to speed. in a really interesting way, and and it's a really good piece of like a bit of chess match kind of acting. I thought this was awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good scene.
And it is followed by another really good scene. Well, at the end of this really good scene, he basically says like, you know, it's like, hey, you got, okay, Matt, you know what? I'm in charge here. You're leaving. That's all there is to it. Okay. So, you know, you're what? Sorry.
You're out of here on the next train or something like that. Right?
Yeah. The last train. You're out of here on the last train today. And he's like, oh, I'll leave on the last train with those two guys. And,
that's right.
And then he walks out.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is basically like, you know, that is the line in the sand being drawn right there in the film. And at this point, pretty much no one can help Kirk Douglas because this town is run by Anthony Quinn. And,
right.
And no one, you know, no one wants to get involved, really, is what's going on. The first thing he does is he goes to the sheriff, and it's another great scene, another really well-written sequence.
I love that scene with the sheriff.
Oh, man, that's a great scene, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recognize that actor? I do not.
I recognize him, but I can't come up with his name. I've seen him in a lot of stuff.
A familiar Western face.
Yep.
And how is it this goes down? He's like, oh, well, you know, the sheriff ain't here, so sorry. Won't be back for a few days. Yeah, well, here's my star. I'm the marshal, you know. And he's like, oh, well, I guess I got one. And he hands him his sheriff star.
Deputy. You know, yeah, deputy yeah. star. Isn't he the deputy?
Isn't he the sheriff?
I don't know.
Isn't he the sheriff? He was lying about that.
Lying about his.
And then he's just like, you know what? Yeah, you know what? You got me. I was lying because I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, and then what is it that Douglas says? Then he says something like, oh, well, you know what this star tells me? You're yellow. And
you're yellow. It's never yellow. Mm-hmm. It's always yellow.
And then the sheriff has a great speech. He's like, well, you know, I happen to just take the long view, you know? I don't see what good it's going to do me to get myself killed trying to help you. That doesn't make any sense. Hell, 60 years from now, the same dirt covering my grave will cover your grave, too. And no one's going to know if I was Whoa. Yellow or you were stupid.
Wow, good memory. All right.
Well, it's more than that. It's like...
Oh, and then Kirk gets pissed, though.
Oh, yeah, man.
He whirls him around in his chair and he says, this is my long view or something like that.
Staying out of my way is going to be good for your long view or something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to serve these warrants myself.
And this is, you know, like this character, like he shows up occasionally. This is just another really good piece of writing in this movie. I mean, the individual scenes in this movie are well above par, I would say.
Yeah.
They're really cool stuff like that, you know, really well acted. And like you said, Kirk Douglas, just mad, just so pissed off every scene in this movie. More so. Every scene, he's more angry. It's great.
Well, it builds up. I like it that way. You know, it just keeps building, you know, because he gets madder the more he thinks of this guy killing and raping his wife, raping then killing. And, I like the way the anger builds in the movie.
Yeah, and we get another John Wick scene here, which is Anthony Quinn confronting his son and the other guy. What's this other guy's name?
Lee.
Yeah, whatever. And gets them out in the desert and just like, you know, it's like, do you know who that squaw was?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, the one guy, the Lee, is just like, ah, she was nobody. Who cares? Get out of here before I kill you.
Yeah, guy lost his job right there.
Yeah. And yeah, he does. He immediately is like, okay, I'm gone. Gets on a horse, doesn't say another word, runs up. And then you get all the John Wick stuff. It's like, what you didn't realize is that Matt Morgan's wife. Yeah, you heard me talk about him enough, haven't you? And
that's right. Yeah.
You slap him around a little bit, you know.
A little bit.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah.
Uh,
I was ecstatic watching all this go down.
All this John Wick stuff.
Oh, it's so much like John Wick.
You know, I had remembered this movie as Anthony Quinn, not how can I put this? Not actually portraying a good cowboy. But he did fine. This last time watching it, I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, he's not like a hardcore guy, you know. He's not right. You know, he's not playing an outlaw. He's playing a wealthy rancher, and he can handle that very much. He's quite compelling in this film. And he looks the part too. He's I like his leather vest very much.
No, I was all prepared to talk about Anthony Quinn not being a cowboy, and he does a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally buy him, and he's, you know, because he's an older guy. You know, I guess Kirk Douglas is a bit older in this; doesn't seem quite as old as Anthony Quinn, but you know, he's playing older generation here too, which that gets it across too. I think that helps. But,
part of the thing with Anthony Quinn is that I always think of him as Zorba the Greek, or, you know, he played a Greek in Guns of Navarone as well. And, he's mm-hmm. played Mexicans and Italians and, you know, about
any nationality. Yeah, he's got that Eli Wallach kind
yes,
of
that's right.
ability to kind of, you know, try on any nationality.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he could be Greek in this. It doesn't really, I mean, Belden suggests he's not, but that, you know, it doesn't matter in the context of this film.
Right,
I don't think
right.
he's playing anything specific. He's playing American. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Now we get into this part here. It starts in this scene, this John Wick scene, where, you know, with the kids, where they start talking about the Indian a little bit, like the fact that she was an Indian,
right.
Meaning that she was, that who gives a shit. If she got raped and murdered, and
right.
All the bad guys talk this way, Anthony Quinn does not abide it. That it pisses him off, but man, it really pisses Kirk Douglas off.
Yeah.
Anytime anyone says something like that, they are getting hit real fast. Like,
you sense that Anthony Quinn doesn't like it because it's Matt Morgan's wife, so much because she's an Indian.
That's probably more what it is, yeah. Yeah. That definitely would be true if it were the character from John Wick. But yeah, like there's this scene where they're on the you know, out by the hitching post, you know, and Kirk Douglas is looking for information about where to find Rick Belden, and you know, one of the guys on the boat is like, I don't see what the problem is around these parts, we kill Indians, and Kirk Douglas elbow punches him in the face. Lays him out cold with his elbow, just no one's gonna I like how no one in town is helping him, but they all kind of like, well, dude, you know, come on, I'm just gonna get killed if I help you. Why would I do that? That makes no sense. And Kirk Douglas, right. to his credit, is always like, yeah, well, you're right about that. I understand. Okay.
That's right. Yep.
happens at the bar at the beginning here. You know, that's where he starts looking for Rick Belden. It happens with the bartender. And everyone's very clear about it. Except for Morticia Adams shows up.
Is she the one that tells him to look in the other bar?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they say, if I were looking for Rick Belden, I'd probably look at that brothel across the street. Mm-hmm. Didn't hear that from me. I'm a little crazy. Bye. And, so then he hears Rick Belden's at the brothel, probably. And, man, he just sneaks right in there, doesn't he?
Well, he's got it all figured out. He knows the layout.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
This is a fortuitous sequence for Douglas.
He looks out here.
It is also the corollary scene with John Wick going to the Red Circle nightclub and hunting down Theon Greyjoy. It is.
We're reviewing The Last Train for John Wick here.
Seriously, like, if you haven't seen either of these movies, like, if you've seen John Wick and not Last Train from Gun Hill, or vice versa, It's worth watching the other one because they complement each other extremely well.
They really do.
This is just about the end of the John Wick stuff. It actually kind of changes into a different movie at this point, into way more Rio Bravo territory. You know, held up in the in the hotel room. That's not from John Wick, but
Rio Bravo. But the first two acts of this film,
or 3:10 to Yuma. The first two acts of this film are John Wickish in the extreme. Then it kind of then it kind of is different after that. But yeah, he's sneaking into the brothel, climbs up the rain pipe or something. Starts upstairs, waiting for his moment, and Rick Belden just happens to come to wander back there.
So of course he doesn't know what Rick Belden looks like, but one of the guys downstairs, in fact, I think it's Brad Dexter, calls out, "Hey, Rick, come on down." Come on. We're playing a hand here.
And they kind of become aware of each other, and Belden hides behind a curtain, and then Kirk Douglas sees his feet and just cold cocks him with his gun and knocks him out under the curtain. Yeah.
Through the curtain, yeah.
And then this is an interesting move at this point, which is to kind of take him downstairs.
I was pretty impressed with Kirk Douglas's strength here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Carrying the dude on his shoulder while
holding
a gun in his right hand.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not something you can fake, I guess. he takes out three or four guys here with his one hand. Yeah. Because he's a badass in this, as you would expect.
You got to wonder why really these guys were drawn down on him. You know, with Rick Belden over his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, that is prophetic, actually, in the film, because that...
Right.
Get to why, but, and basically just sort of, hustles everyone out of this brothel, locks some of them in the basement, and kind of takes over the place, and he's got to wait till 9 o'clock when the last train leaves Gun Hill, giving the film its title.
Right.
And
In the meantime... So he's got to make it from the bar to the back to the hotel.
Yeah, he's got to make it from there to the train station, yeah.
Well, he holds up in the hotel, though, waiting for the train.
That's right. He takes him out of the brothel, walks him down the street.
Right.
Yeah, Nervy. And gets a room at the hotel. And basically the guy's just like, "Oh yeah, I won't give you a room. No way." And then he's like, "Oh, you're going to give me a room. I have a gun." And it is actually not until this point in the film where we find out that Carolyn Jones is Anthony Quinn's girlfriend.
Yeah, there's a scene between the two of them, yeah.
Yeah, it's not quite yet, because first she's making bets that she can walk right into that room, because she knows Kirk Douglas. That's a weird little thing for her to do. She's like downstairs, it's like, "I know him well enough, I could just walk in there and have a conversation with him, and I'll change my clothes just to prove it, and you'll be able to see me in the window." And it's just like, what are you doing? And then during that scene, Anthony Quinn shows up and is like, oh, what are you doing here? What I remember." And, we kind of figure out, they're together. She wants to marry him. She asks him to marry him while he is trying to get his son out of a room with a gun to his head. Because she's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's where we learn about their past relationship and, the fact that, first of all, that he's abused her.
Yeah.
And sent her to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then why she would want to still marry the guy is, I guess, right out of the Law and Order series these days. I mean, how women who are abused don't want to press charges a lot of the time.
Well, it's, I think, context sensitive here, because this is the Old West, and he is a powerful man, and she is, in this world, this almost entirely male world, there's no other women in this film other than his wife at the beginning.
Yeah, but she has a romantic feeling for the guy. She wants to marry the guy. It's not just because he's powerful.
Well, you know, yeah. Uh-huh. It's not a well-advised decision.
No, not in this case.
She's a little nuts, I think. Like, this character, and that's what's kind of interesting about her, is that she's, you know, she's making kind of insane decisions. Just nervy, ballsy, low-payoff decisions.
Maybe she but feels like she's got nothing to lose.
I mean, yeah, she's playing some level of high-stakes poker throughout the whole movie, and it's very interesting, and I think that's why you get the sense, you know, why you get people who would respond to this being like, that's my favorite character. That's an interesting... Mm-hmm. That's a great performance. I'm really intrigued on what's going on with her, and because it is. It can't really be categorized. Like, you wouldn't call her a villain at all. She's not a bad guy in this film.
No. In fact, she ends up providing the means by which he can get out of the hotel.
Yeah, uh-huh. But she's certainly not a love interest, and you wouldn't really call her a good guy. It's a very strange kind of a, but she's also not like a manipulator in the classic sense, because she doesn't seem to have her shit together at all. Like, she's very emotionally driven. You know,
doesn't know exactly what she wants.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's kind of a really exciting character to be appearing in this. It's a neat way to write a female lead in a movie, I would say. I found her more interesting as written than a lot of these other archetypes that we've been discussing on these, you know, versions of this archetype, you know. Yeah. I don't know if the actress was as engaging as, you know, Angie Dickinson or Jodie Foster's, you know, unqualified great work in Maverick. But she's not bad, and it's, you know, again, I like the character a lot. So she's sent up to talk to Matt Morgan at this point. And that's tricky because, you know, you're not sure whose side she's on at this point, you know, not entirely sure what she's trying to accomplish. She kind of tries to talk a little sense to him, you know, but she also gives him the respect not to be like, you know, you gotta do what Belden wants, you know. That's the only way you'll live. She doesn't even do any of that stuff. She's kind of just like, what is it you want? You're interesting. Why are you doing it this way? You know, have you thought about everything?
But she does say, you know, you should probably just get out of town.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is self-evident. Yeah. He asks her for a shotgun, and he says something provocative, which is, "What I'm planning, I need a shotgun." Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, "Well, no, I'm not gonna. I don't. How would I even do that?"
Right.
So the long and the short is, she comes down and she's now kind of on the fence about what she feels, surprise, surprise, about whose side she wants to be on. I believe she describes Marshall Morgan as, I wrote it down here. That poor fool with his high-flown ideals.
Yeah.
And, then the other guy, Lee, shows back up. Like, he's back in town. He heard what's going on. He's like, I think I can help or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the fly in the ointment.
Mm-hmm.
Lee is.
That's exactly it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Just kind of he's important to the plot in a way that, you know, kind of turns everything on its ear at the end, I guess.
Right.
Beyond that, he's not much of a character. And really the last half hour, 40 minutes of this film is Kirk Douglas holed up in this hotel room with his prisoner handcuffed to the bed, and people come up and have conversations with him about it, like what they want, what he wants to do, you know, what the move is, yeah.
Oh, including Anthony Quinn, right?
That's the next one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, another really good scene. Another really good piece of dialogue. Good acting with those guys. This is great because this is where I think the Matt Morgan character starts to drift off a little bit into being a little bit nuts, I think. because he's talking
revenge
about
driven.
His respect for the law is what's driving this. And it's just like, no.
No, I don't think so.
That's not it. Like, yeah, I'm not buying that. It's, you know, and this is where it kind of comes up. It's like, we used to both of us be on the other side of the law. You remember that, right? And he's just like, I'm not anymore. Now I'm a marshal. This is what matters now.
What he said was, I found out it didn't pay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a little bit like that scene in John Wick, really, where not this. Just kidding. But it is. But we're not so different, you and I, John Wick. It's, you know what I'm talking about. God took away your wife to punish me. That whole scene. And it's another fruitless conversation for both of them in a sense. You know, neither of them gets what they want, there doesn't really seem to be much of a way to it.
He sets it up by opening the door and placing the mirror so he can see down the hallway.
Right, yeah.
Anthony Quinn's got some backup that mm-hmm. is supposed to come up and take out Matt Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk Douglas shoots down the hallway, sees him through the mirror, and bam, bam.
He's hyper aware of everything that's going on.
And
sure.
Oh, by the way, something we haven't mentioned is that Anthony Quinn, back in the old days, saved Matt Morgan's life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now, with this dirty trick Anthony Quinn was trying to play in the hotel by having backup come and, you know, sneak up the stairs and take out Matt Morgan, he has now repaid. He could kill him for what he's. In fact, he says, "I could kill you for that." You know,
mm-hmm.
he said, "But I won't." And now we're even.
Yeah.
So all bets are off. He's not going to spare. Not going to spare Anthony Quinn anymore.
Mm-hmm. Man, this is a good. Good movie. You know, it's never a very big film. It's never, you know, there's no big action scenes in this, really. As it turns out, there's some high tension sequences,
yeah,
like at the very end, but there's no big shootout sequences. It feels like a small movie, but man, they fill it up completely with good writing and performances and stuff.
Yep.
I don't think Sturgis really, you know, does anything exceptional behind the camera necessarily, but as far as just
do their thing.
Yeah, just telling the story, you know, this works as well as just about any studio western from this era we've watched. In my mind, I enjoyed this immensely. Just as a pot boiler, you know, as a thriller, yeah. You know,
good movie, sort of, good mm-hmm. suspenseful movie.
We're getting near the end here, and you know, night has fallen. It's getting close to 9 o'clock when the train leaves. There's a great scene, a monologue that is straight out of Hang 'em High, where he's talking to Rick Belden, Anthony Quinn's kid, who's handcuffed to the bed. You know, he's talking about, you know, my father-in-law asked me to kill you slow, the Indian way. I'm gonna kill you slow, but the white man way.
Oh, and which then he is the vivid description of the hanging, right?
Yeah, huh? Which is like the end. It's kind of like the end of Oliver Twist. the very long sort of recitation of what happens to, you know, a convicted convict, and you know all the stages it goes through before they hang him, and then they stick the rope around your neck. And they put the hood over it, and you're wondering, you know, oh, what's the last sound I'm going to hear? Well, it's going to be the trapdoor dropping out under you, you know, that sort of stuff. And it's actually, I think this is a callback to his ability with storytelling early on in the film. This is the payoff to that, the thing that was established earlier, with him telling Ned Land stories to the kids, you know, that he relishes storytelling. This is... It's a great bit. It's
yeah. I love the way you make connections. I really do. You know?
Well, I think that makes structural sense. I think that that is the intention of that. Aside from the really good thing it does, which it sets up Kirk Douglas as a man who is very happy and full of life in the beginning of the film. So they're going to burn him out, you know, or it's not even a plan. Some cowpuncher guy just takes it upon himself. Lee. Is it Lee? It's Lee. That's right. Lee. Besides, he's going to light the place on fire. And that's how we're going to solve this problem. And even Anthony Quinn is like, what idiot thought that would work? Linda gets him a shotgun. I don't know how she got it, but she brings him a shotgun. And we're, you know, it's down to the wire, you know. Now he has no option. He's got to get to that train. It's going to leave in 10 minutes. Building's on fire. So he leads out Rick Belden with a shotgun on his under his head, like just pointed into his chin, like digging into the part under his chin.
That's,
with his finger on the trigger. It looks painful.
Yeah.
And they're leading him out. Out through the burning building. This is some great shots of him, like, you know, sort of bracketed by burning doorways, you know, leading a guy out.
Timbers falling.
Yeah. Like, onto a buggy that they're both standing on in the middle of town with like 30 guys or something like that with guns trained on them, watching it go down. They're no one's firing because, you know, they don't want to hit Rick Belden or rather allow Rick Belden's head to be blown off by the shotgun.
Yeah, right.
And this ending takes an immense amount of convenience for it to work with the train when it comes in, but it does work pretty well. Which is,
yep.
They get there, get to the train station, the train is arriving, and Lee, the other guy that helped rape his wife, is on the other side, and he's like, he's got a gun drawn, and he's not going to let him take his friend away. And he thinks he's being a hero here. And,
well, do you notice that Kirk Douglas waits until the last second before he drives the buggy over the tracks so that he separates, the train comes through and separates him from all of Craig Belden and all his men?
Very cagey, yes.
Yep.
So it's just the three of them at that point, and Lee draws on him. And nobody is better drawn than Kirk Douglas. So Lee ends up shooting Rick Belden. Kirk Douglas, of course, drops the shotgun and blows Lee away.
Yep.
Killing both the guys that
raped his wife. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Handily, you know. It worked out pretty damn well, honestly, for Marshall Matt Morgan here. Yeah. You know, he's not thrilled about how it went down. He wanted to take this guy back to the trial. He wanted to go down that way, but, you know, then, you know, train stops at the station. Anthony Quinn runs around it, and he's like, nah, it's over now, Belden. It's over. But
Anthony Not Quinn over.
Just can't let it go, you know? He's just like, no, I can't. I can't do it. I can't. You know, and then they got to have a quick draw. Got to end the movie with a quick draw between these two characters. It's great. It's great.
Yep.
And I think everybody.
Well, you know how it's going to end.
Everyone knows how this is going to end. Yeah. Kirk Douglas knows how it's going to end. He's like, hey, you sure here, Craig? You know.
Yeah.
And yeah, he is. And so then they have the quick draw, and Kirk Douglas pulls first. You know, is able guns him down right on the railway platform.
Actually, he forces Anthony Quinn to draw.
That's right. He draws first.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You're gonna have to draw first, is what he says, literally.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What I was trying to say is he was faster.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely quite an image. The end of this film is full of just iconic, great images. Like, it wasn't until the last 10 minutes. The last 10 minutes look great, and there's that burning building and this showdown at the train depot. Really cool. Yep. Really cool look for the end of this film. And Linda runs to Belden as he's dying, and Marshall Morgan rides off on the last train from Gun Hill, feeling kind of bad about how it all went down. And that is Last Train from Gun Hill.
Last Train from Gun Hill.
Uh-huh.
Good.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yes, it is. I thought this was just great. I don't know. What's your star rating? What are you going with for this
one? Four.
I'm going four as well. I was really, I'm close to 4.5. I thought this was awesome. I think, you know, just some things, the music, you know, I don't know. I don't see myself revisiting it too much. Yeah. but it's just really strong. It's just a terrific Western, and it is atypical for a 1951 studio film, I think. It's a lot darker than what I've come to expect. It's a lot, you know, a lot more... Not more of a you know, lot, way less action focused, more character based, more dialogue based. But it's also like real fleet of foot. It moves right by. You know, it's a quick hour, 32 minutes.
Hour and a half. Yeah, hour and a half, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Moves real good. I mean, this is as great a discovery as I've had for this podcast. I think I enjoyed this immensely. Yeah.
That's great.
4 stars. Yeah. How about 4?
That's what I'm saying. 4. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not 4.5?
I don't know that this is a perennial one that I'm going to revisit a lot, maybe. Yeah. But I mean, I could. I could certainly see myself watching this again. It's
Well, I have. I've seen it, you know, like I say, a half dozen times probably.
Yeah. You said it a half dozen times. I was like, wow, I'd never heard of this one. This was one that had slipped through the cracks for me. I don't think many people have.
Kirk, I think Douglas more people would have recognized. Iconic for me, man. I love Kirk Douglas. Yeah. In almost anything he's in, you know, I've always loved the actor.
I gotta watch him in more. I think I've got holes in my Kirk Douglas viewing. I don't think I've seen much of what he has done. Like he's done
Indian Fighter, The Way West, God, a bunch of stuff. The Lonely Are the Brave, which is not—it's kind of a modern-day western.
We've talked about doing that at some point. I would do another Kirk Douglas film in a heartbeat. This was way fun. It was terrific. Yeah, makes me want to watch Spartacus and 20,000 Leagues again, too. He's so good in those.
He really is. He's great. Paths of Glory is wonderful, too.
Yeah.
Not a Western.
It's just a great movie star. Just a terrific A-level movie star. I mean, it's as good as it gets, Kirk Douglas.
Yeah.
Still kicking, by the way. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Have you ever seen Lust for Life?
He plays Picasso, is that right?
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh. It does Van Gogh. No, yeah. I haven't.
Mm-hmm. Nominated for an Academy Award.
That was the only time, right?
I think... Was he nominated for Spartacus?
Maybe.
Might have been nominated for Spartacus. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, he should have had an Oscar at some point. That guy's great.
I think he got an honorary one.
Mm, he might have done. Point. I saw him at the Oscars a couple years ago, I remember.
Yeah.
He was hilarious.
He and Michael Douglas' son came out. Didn't they come out together or something?
Something like that, yeah.
He's recovered from a stroke and everything. He's still hanging in there.
Yeah, he's in his 90s. He still seems vibrant. I mean, he seemed great at the Oscars. He was a little goofy, but, you know, he's very, very on top of it. You know, he was great. He's awesome. What a life, Kirk Douglas.
He really is. No kidding.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Anthony Quinn's not too shabby either.
No, he lived very old too, didn't he? He lived a very long time. Made movies for 50 years.
And some truly great films for Anthony Quinn.
Well, I would say this is pretty much one of them. This is now a new Kirk Douglas touchstone for me, at least. He's so cool in this.
That's great.
I don't know. Anything else to say about this particular film?
Nope. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it was great watching it again.
Uh-huh. Strong recommendation. Thank you for the recommendation, Stephen. This is an awesome movie to get turned on to. what else have you seen recently, Dad?
Well, I just happened to have gone to see John Wick Chapter 2. Yeah. I agree with everything you said. Wasn't it in the previous podcast we talked about John Wick?
I think that's when I saw it,
Yeah, we were talking about it. And I agree with everything you said about it, about the action sequences being up to par with the first one, or maybe even a little better in some
spectacular.
Cases.
Spectacular, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
that shootout in the Hall of Mirrors, wow, that's cool. That's so cool. That shotgun the scene when he's hitting out the shotgun, oh, God.
Yeah. That was great. And
but the movie itself,
I loved like you said, the stuff with the Continental Hotel and the different Continental hotels. So we got We got Ian McShane, who's the head honcho at the one in New York, right?
Yes.
And then the guy in, what is it? Where did he go?
He went to Italy.
Rome.
Rome,
was it Rome?
Is it Rome?
Mm-hmm. Right. And that was cool.
I'm excited to watch that again. Yeah, it's a very good film, very exciting, very fun. Has some gorgeous sequences. Really fun performances. I mean, I want to see it again. You can't go to movies twice anymore. They cost way too much. That's
right. You gotta wait until it comes on TV.
But but I can't wait to watch it again when it comes out on video, and I will. That's a terrific time.
I gotta tell you, this has nothing to do with John Wick,
mm-hmm.
but I was channel surfing the other night, and guess what was on? And I watched this for your sake, man.
Oh,
Masters of the Universe.
Oh, wow!
And I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw the last. Oh,
it's not a good movie.
Half hour. Oh no, it's a terrible movie. But really, really nostalgic. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man and Frank Langella as Skeletor. And
Frank Langella is very good in that movie.
Yeah,
very good.
Langella is a good actor. Jesus. He really
he
is.
Elevates Skeletor quite a bit. I have a very distinct memory of Masters of the Universe, by the way, which was we went to see it in movie theaters. You took me. And I think some of my friends to go see Masters of the Universe. I was pretty excited, you know, because I was into Masters of the Universe. But even at the time, I was kind of like, that wasn't such a good movie.
Yeah, really? You didn't tell me that.
Oh, well, I remember being like, you know, I had hoped that would be better, but why were they on Earth? Why didn't they spend it in Eternia? You know, why I didn't like it. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I remember I had to, you know, use the bathroom at the end, so I left the theater to use the bathroom, and you stayed in to watch the credits, as you did back then for some reason. You were always very insistent on watching credits. And there's a teaser at the end. There's a brief little scene at the end where Skeletor survives, and he's like, I'll be back! Or something like that.
And he never made it back.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you told me about that afterwards, you know, after we got back out, and we all thought you were teasing us. No, there was more Skeletor at the end.
Masters of the Universe.
It's very real. I saw it later on, and I was like, oh my God, it was real.
Incredibly bad film, though.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. What have I seen lately worth mentioning? Get Out. I saw Get Out, the new horror film. You may have heard a little bit about it because it's getting rapturous reviews. People love this movie, and with reason. It's wonderful. It's an absolute delight. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's just so much fun. It's
Haunted
a wonderful.
House?
No, not at all. It's really hard to describe it without kind of giving it away. The trailers give it away, but it doesn't matter if you give it away either. So, I mean, everyone's seen it at this point, I guess I can just say it. And the basic, I'm not going to give away the main twist, but the premise is a black man is dating a white girl, goes home to meet his wealthy white family in the suburbs, and they're creepy and sinister in their in sort of their weird white guilt. It's using the way a horror film is, that using the timing and the tempo and the creepiness of a horror film to kind of highlight like social aggressions that sort of go uncommented on, but
bordering on racism.
Yeah, but they're not just obnoxious or off-putting. They're ominous in this, you know, because it's a horror film. So, you know, like they meet the, you know, they hit a deer on the way in, you know, into this, you know, all-white neighborhood. And, you know, a cop pulls him over he pulls over and talks to him. And he's like, hey, so can I see your license too there, son? And he's like, why do you want to see his license? I was driving. He was like, no, I didn't ask if he was driving, you know. That kind of thing. But it's treated as a creepy moment, you know, like set up for a horror. And then they go and meet the dad, and he talks about the, you know, they talk about hitting a deer, and he's like, oh, man, I just hate those deers. Man, if you could just get rid of all those deers, that'd be great. You did us a favor getting rid of that deer, son. It's a really great movie. It's really well performed and really smart, really funny. I mean, I wouldn't recommend horror for you usually, but I think you would get a kick out of this movie. Get out. You know, maybe rent
normally
it. Normally,
I'm not a horror guy.
Yeah, It's not gross at all. It's you know, it is. It's pretty freaky by the end, but not in a gross way at all. It's
not
almost
slasher.
A comedy. No. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It has a little bit. It reminded me ultimately of kind of the Stepford Wives or Being John Malkovich.
Whoa.
It's great. Uh-huh. All right. Next episode of Westerns with Dad, 2 weeks from now, we are going to be doing a twofer. We're going to be doing both the old version and the new version of 310 to Yuma. That is the original with who's in the original?
Glenn Ford and Van Heflin.
Glenn Ford and Van Heflin, and the remake from about 10 years ago, starring Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. And we're going to be talking about both of them, which one's better, how they work together, all the other things about 310 to Yuma. So
wow,
that's
has it been 10 years?
I don't know.
The latest been like 310 to Yuma. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Could be. I mean, you know what? It could. Maybe it's a lot less. I'm not sure, but it's, you know.
It's been
a little while. It's been a little while. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's next time. Thank you for tuning in this week. You can leave reviews for us on iTunes. Ratings and reviews, those are very helpful for our podcast, from what I understand. You can also write to us at westernswithdad@gmail.com. And if you'd like, make a request on something you'd like to see or the kind of things you'd like to see us talk about. We're talking about some new ideas for content in this year, you know, some longer format stuff that we want to approach. So I don't know if you'd like to see some of that, too. We're interested in, you know, TV shows and miniseries that you might be interested in. Although, I mean, I think I don't know. We're playing with the ideas and what we can do. So anything you want to see, basically, let us know. And you can find the website, westernswithdad.com. All the episodes that are off the iTunes feed, the early ones, including to this date our most popular episode, Bone Tomahawk, are available there, if not for download, from the iTunes store. So thank you very much. And this is it for now.
Adios, amigos.